The Scarlet Pimpernel by Baroness Orczy. Paris, September 1792. A surging, seething, murmuring crowd of beings that are human only in name, for to the eye and ear they seem naught but savage creatures, animated by vile passions and by the lust of vengeance and of hate. The hour, some little time before sunset, and the place, the West Barricade, at the very spot where a decade later a proud tyrant raised an undying monument to the nation's glory and to his own vanity. During the greater part of the day, the guillotine had been kept busy at its ghastly work. All that France had boasted of in the past centuries, of ancient names and blue blood, had paid toll to her desire for liberty and for fraternity. The carnage had only ceased at this late hour of the day, because there were other, more interesting sights for the people to witness, a little while before the final closing of the barricades for the night. And so the crowd rushed away from the Place de la Grève, and made for the various barricades in order to watch this interesting and amusing sight. It was to be seen every day, for those aristos were such fools. They were traitors to the people, of course, all of them, men, women, and children, who happened to be descendants of the great men who since the Crusades had made the glory of France, her old noblesse. And now they had to hide for their lives, to fly if they wished to avoid the tardy vengeance of the people. And they did try to hide, and tried to fly, but they were nearly always caught at the barricades. Sergeant Bibot, especially at the West Gate, had a wonderful nose for scenting an aristo in the most perfect disguise. And then, of course, the fun began. Bibot would look at his prey as a cat looks upon a mouse, play with him, sometimes for quite a quarter of an hour, pretend to be hoodwinked by the disguise, by the wigs and other bits of theatrical makeup, which hid the identity of a ci-devant noble marquis or count. Oh, Bibot had a keen sense of humour, and it was well worth hanging round the West Barricade in order to see him catch an aristo in the very act of trying to flee from the vengeance of the people. But today, all the sergeants in command at the various barricades had had special orders. Recently, a very great number of aristos had succeeded in escaping out of France and in reaching England safely. It was asserted that these escapes were organized by a band of Englishmen, whose daring seemed to be unparalleled, and who were under the leadership of a man whose pluck and audacity were almost fabulous. No one had seen these mysterious Englishmen, and as for their leader, he was never spoken of, save with a superstitious shudder. Citoyen Fouquier-Tinville would in the course of the day receive a scrap of paper from some mysterious source. Sometimes he would find it in the pocket of his coat, at others it would be handed to him by someone in the crowd, whilst he was on his way to the sitting of the Committee of Public Safety. The paper always contained a brief notice that the band of meddlesome Englishmen were at work, and it was always signed with a device drawn in red, a little star-shaped flower, which we in England call the Scarlet Pimpernel. Within a few hours of the receipt of this impudent notice, the citoyen of the Committee of Public Safety would hear that so many royalists and aristocrats had succeeded in reaching the coast, and were on their way to England and safety. The sun was sinking low down in the west. Bibot prepared himself to close the gates. "En avant the carts," he said. Some dozen covered carts were drawn up in a row, ready to leave town, in order to fetch the produce from the country close by for market the next morning. The women who drove the carts usually spent their day on the Place de la Grève, beneath the platform of the guillotine, knitting and gossiping, whilst they watched the rows of tumbrils arriving with the victims the Reign of Terror claimed every day. "Hey, la mère," said Bibot to one of these horrible hags. "What have you got there?" He had seen her earlier in the day, with her knitting and the whip of her cart close beside her. And now she had fastened a row of curly locks to the whip handle, all colours, from gold to silver, fair to dark, and she stroked them with her huge, bony fingers as she laughed at Bibo. "I made friends with Madame Guillotine's lover," she said with a coarse laugh. "He cut these off for me from the heads as they rolled down. My grandson's got the smallpox," she said with a jerk of her thumb towards the inside of her cart. "Some say it's the plague. If it is, I shan't be allowed to come into Paris tomorrow." At the first mention of the word smallpox, Bibo had stepped hastily backwards, and when the old hag spoke of the plague, he retreated from her as fast as he could. "Curse you," he muttered. "Get out with you and your plague-stricken brood." And with a rough laugh and coarse jest, the old hag whipped up her lean nag and drove her cart out of the gate. The incident had spoilt the afternoon. The people were terrified of these two horrible curses, the two maladies which nothing could cure, and which were the precursors of an awful and lonely death. They hung about the barricades, silent and sullen for a while, eyeing one another suspiciously, avoiding each other as if by instinct, lest the plague lurked already in their midst. Presently, a captain of the guard suddenly appeared. "A cart!" he shouted breathlessly, even before he had reached the gates. "What cart?" asked Bibo roughly. "Driven by an old hag. A covered cart. There were a dozen. An old hag who said her son had the plague?" "Oh, yes. You've not let them go." "Morbleu!" said Bibo, whose purple cheeks had suddenly become white with fear. "The cart contained the ci-devant Comtesse de Tournay and her two children, all of them traitors and condemned to death." "And their driver?" muttered Bibo as a superstitious shudder ran down his spine. "Sacre tonnerre," said the captain. "But it is feared that it was that accursed Englishman himself, the Scarlet Pimpernel."